It's a trap!
Hello and welcome to episode number 131 of Radio TCX, your weekly source for X-Wing news and strategy. My name's Tim Dugan, and my normal co-host Carson is not going to be able to join us this week, so in his stead, I have a returning guest host, John McDermid. John, thanks for coming back.
Thanks for having me, Tim.
We are really excited to play some second edition X-Wing. I know I am, John. I know you've played a lot of games too, right?
Oh yeah, I've played plenty.
So today we're going to dive into some, I call them little details. I don't know what category you'd put this in, but just kind of our overall observations that we've seen now that we've got a decent number of games under our belts here. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about our favorite lists so far in second edition. So let's get into it. So in the past couple of weeks, Carson and I have already shared a decent number of thoughts about list building in second edition, how it's changed. I want to get your perspective in on this, though, John, since obviously people listen to mostly me and Carson on the show. I like to get some outside opinions, what you're thinking about second edition so far. You generally, from what we've talked about before the show, seem very positive on it. So, I mean, what are your main points here with list building? Why do you like it in second edition?
Yeah, sure. So far, when I've been playing my second edition games, I've personally really enjoyed this building. In first edition, it was getting a little tedious with card stacking and all those things. But one of the things that I've noticed about list building so far is that it seems a lot easier, and that makes it certainly more fun for me. When it comes to list building and putting your ships together, one of the things that's made it easier is that there are fewer upgrade options now. So instead of having what seems like a limitless amount of different options that you can have in each category or upgrade slot on ships, you now have, let's just say, a handful of options. So for example, the system slot, there are now four options instead of having however many there were in first edition.
Oh yeah, I mean, and in first edition, there were only a couple, I guess, real usable ones there. But even still, there's amongst those four, you've got a pretty big point spread across how much you want to invest into that slot. I think it is really interesting because we're going to be mostly talking about the conversion kit content. So I've been calling that legacy, I guess. I don't know how to categorize that, but all the reprinted cards and remade cards. Obviously, if we're just talking the second edition Wave 1 content, that's a very narrow card pool because you only have a dozen ships or so. But talking even just those conversion kit contents, it seems like there's a lot of cards, but generally, there are fewer, and the complexity is down, right? So I find in general, and this is not universally true, but in general, upgrade card abilities are generally, I don't want to say simpler, they're leaner and they're more clear, generally. You know, we've seen some weird language stuff in the game so far, a couple of quirks here and there. But generally, I feel like the language is pretty clear about what a card does. Marksmanship, the talent card, you change a hit to a crit in the bullseye firing arc. Straightforward, clear, easy to decide if you want that or not. And I think that's really helpful in list building because it makes it easier to check out your list to do specifically what you want it to do. And since we have a lot of similarly point-costed cards, like, say, within the talent slot, you can feel like you can actually, like, make your list unique to what you want it to accomplish. And the options that you have are just pretty straightforward.
Absolutely. And one of the things, too, that makes picking those upgrades a lot nicer, too, when you're looking at it prior to the game, is that a lot of the cards now very helpfully reference exactly when that card ability is going to trigger. So whether that's at the end of your specific activation or at the beginning of your specific engagement or at the beginning of the engagement phase, things like that that make list building so much more easy.
Well, and I've said it before, too, the specificity of those timing windows, I think, helps the long-term health of the game. So you have more upgrade design options, right? So they're going to be able to release cards that have similar effects but happen at different timing windows. So I think having more specific timing windows they can activate in is going to mean we're going to be able to get more interesting new upgrade cards later on in the game's life. I'm also a big fan of far fewer combos so far. Like, we've seen a couple cool things. I'm really loving on my Boba the Han Scum Han Gunner combined with Perceptive Co-Pilot. I think that's a really cool card combo. I so far have not seen anything that gets much more complex beyond that, right?
Right. And I mean, and that's just two cards. You know, to get the same interaction in first edition, you might have needed maybe even three, sometimes even four cards to do something even similar to that effect. So streamlining that process is just going to make it a whole lot easier for everybody, new players, old players, make that process a lot simpler.
And there's just fewer upgrade cards, I find, on the table from game to game. Like, even in lists that have very few ships in them, two or three that I've been seeing, usually you're not looking at more than, I don't know, 3 to 4 upgrade cards on each of those ships max, right? We're not seeing the same kind of insane card stockpiling you'd see with, like, Nim Miranda lists in first edition, where there'd be, you know, what, 8 to 10 cards on each of those ships.
And that's pretty generous, too. I mean, the more ships you have, the fewer upgrades you're going to see, too. So if I've played games where I've been looking at a 4-ship list and there's maybe a card or 2 cards on each ship, and that just makes it so much easier as an opponent to figure out what your opponent's list is, too.
But I think at the same time, thanks to things like linked actions and mobile firing arcs, even if you don't throw a lot of upgrade cards on a ship, the ships are still interesting to use, right? And things like red actions on top of that, too, give kind of a weight to each action. So even if you have a really simply loaded out ship or a ship with no upgrade cards at all, the ships themselves are still interesting and fun to play with. So it's not like in first edition where if you had just had an A-Wing with nothing on it, that's really not going to be a fun ship to fly.
Right, there are options beyond your list.
The other point I'd bring up, though, with list building is beyond it being easier, I think it actually is more fun. And there is a degree to which I'm a game player. I like a certain amount of complexity in my games. And going into second edition, we definitely taken the complexity back a huge step. I expect that to change in the future. So I think as the game develops, naturally new upgrades and abilities will be introduced so that the game will get gradually more complex. And that's a good thing, I think, for games. Games should change over time. Hopefully it won't get to the level of card comboing that we had previously. I think we have some tools in place. The developers have some tools in place that they can adjust that over time. But I think list building is more fun because, I mean, first of all, it feels like there's an increased number of cards that are, I guess, quote unquote, viable, right? You don't have as many staple cards like you saw in first edition.
Right. So, I mean, for example, you're not looking at only having Lone Wolf on Boba. You have more options now. You could throw Fearlessness on him. You could throw Trick Shot on him. And having those options, you know, it makes decision-making more important when you're building your list. Mm-hmm. But the nice thing is that with those increased amount of viable options, it doesn't feel like you're punishing yourself for taking one over the other when you're list building.
Right. It doesn't seem like if you want to try something new and different, you're going to be regretting it the whole time going for another upgrade card. Obviously, that might be the case in the future here as we see this game progress. But right now, I feel really comfortable trying a bunch of different upgrade cards. And I've seen loadouts even on the same ship that feel interesting and diverse, right? I feel like, you know, things like a Fang, pretty much every time you're going to throw Fearlessness on there. But beyond ships like that, which kind of have a narrow focus and play style, I feel like I could load out Boba in a lot of different ways. I might not want to do a list with a Lone Wolf Boba, or if I'm opting for a ship like Cath Scarlet, Lone Wolf isn't going to seem like a great option, so I'm going to opt for something else in that talent slot. I like the ability to make those decisions and have them impact the game in a significant way. And obviously a big point of jumping into second edition right when it's launching is, for the time being, we don't have a lot of net decking or net listing or anything. So obviously that's going to happen eventually, where people are going to find the combos, the tier one lists, as it were, that are just going to generally rise above the rest. But actually, I think that's one of the reasons it's really good to get in on a game at the ground floor like this. Like, it's going to take a little time for that to settle out, especially with the massive amount of stuff in those conversion kits. Like, it's going to take a little while before I think we find that those gold combinations.
And even if you line up against an opponent that has a similar build to yours, they might have a different plan than you do to use those cards and incorporate it into their build. So it's going to feel like you're flying against a different list.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the ships in second edition, particularly conversion kit content, where we're pretty much seeing every ship that was released previously available to play again, the ships feel like they have more specific roles. So you can actually, when you're list building, choose options at similar point totals that feel distinctly different. Thanks to, I mean, all the new mechanics, it would be crazy to go through every little new mechanic here. But even ships at similar point costs, they no longer have to be directly compared to each other. They generally have their roles there. So even if something costs about as much as an X-Wing, there's a reason you might choose the X-Wing over that or that over the X-Wing, right?
And we saw a lot of that in first edition too, but with these limited amounts of upgrade cards, you can really filter down exactly what you want your ship to be and really tailor it to your needs and your wants from what you want out of your games.
So, John, I asked you before we started recording today, like, just pick a few key points there that you've noticed now that you've gotten, I don't know, what, 20 games of X-Wing under your belt, right?
Something like that, yeah.
Close to that number, hopefully. More than me right now so far. What, like, what's a big thing you've noticed? What do you think is going to be important as we as competitive players are going into a new game with a new competitive metagame? And the first thing you brought up was Initiative 6.
Right, so I think it's important for me to preface my point by saying that I have a very small sample size of the people I've played. I haven't played against a variety of people. It's been kind of the same group. But one thing that I've noticed a lot in playing those games with those people is that Initiative 6 has been super important in the list that we've been flying.
Well, and I think even with the small sample size, I think that'll probably be a consistent feature of play groups across the country, across the world. And I think there's a couple obvious reasons, right? Where it's pretty easy to list build around an ace at Initiative 6, right?
Yeah, there's such a limited amount of Initiative 6 aces. I think each faction has one really strong option. So the Imperials have Darth Vader, Scum has Fenn Rao, and the Rebels have Wedge Antilles.
Yeah, those would be probably the go-tos, I'd say. It's interesting that even if you're looking at conversion kits, you have a couple kind of what I'd call AZ ships you could build around. Those big three plus Rebels have like Han Solo in the Falcon, if you want to count that. They've got, Imperials got Soontra Fel. Scum has a couple other six options, I guess you could call aces. What is really cool is that for the most part, even if just the Wave 1 content for second edition, you still have those Initiative 6 powerhouses, right? You've still got Wedge there. You've still got Vader. You've still got Fenn Rao. So I think in the conversion kit, Initiative 6 is going to be huge. I think in just the Wave 1 content, that Initiative 6 is going to be absolutely massive, particularly, I think, Darth Vader.
Right, and there's so much you can do with those Initiative 6, too. We had talked about building your ships to your specific playstyle, and having Initiative 6 options really allows you to choose, do you want a flanker? Do you want a jouster? What do you want out of your Initiative 6 ship in your list? And from there, you build down and fill in with your generics or your other named pilots and kind of go from there.
And just Initiative 6s in general, beyond what I would call these, you know, ace ships, there's only about 10 across all three factions so far. And that's a really narrow pool. We see a lot of Initiative 5 ships and a lot of Initiative 5 ships with really great abilities. So I think just on that basic level, having the repositioning and activation options you'd get at Initiative 6 is massive. But to that end, you're probably going to be facing off against a decent number of other Initiative 6 ships, which means I think bids are more important than ever in second edition.
Yeah, and with the increased granularity in points now with second edition, there's going to be a lot more space for people to throw bids in there too. I think, for example, like I never would have flown a 93-point list in first edition, but having played some of my games in second edition, I feel comfortable playing with a list that's 188 points, and that would be like a 6-point bid in first edition.
Right, and like in first edition, trying to get control initiative was huge often, you know, even at ships at really high pilot skills, like pilot skill 10 sometimes, pilot skill 11 sometimes, controlling initiative would be an important part of it. But yeah, you really generally, with a couple, you know, notable exceptions at some high-level events, you wouldn't see that initiative bid drop much below 97, 96. Those would be the low ends. A lot of the initiative bid play was in, you know, do I run 97? Do I run 98? Do I run 99? Here, it seems so far like I'm more inclined to run those really wide bids. One of my lists is 191 points. I don't even have a 6 in that list. I just think the 5 is so important for the overlap. But I feel comfortable there. Like, there are a couple upgrade options I could throw to fill in that gap. But I think the bids are important enough that I'm willing to take that extra, you know, point range, which I guess in, you know, first edition X-Wing, a 191 point list would be almost like a you know, 95 point list, which I really never ran back in the day. But I feel pretty comfortable with it. I think a lot of that has to do with, I don't know, the more or less the simpler upgrade cards that we were talking about. Since there's fewer staples, I feel less like I'm missing a huge opportunity if I don't include an extra torpedo or something. I think the bid is big enough there to compensate. Where in first edition, the extra damage you could do with an upgrade like that would possibly, you know, be worth taking a smaller bid just to get that extra damage output. But here I feel comfortable really going for those big bids there to get control of who has first player.
Right, and you don't have enough points to throw in a filler ship either. So if you're at 188 points, you can't just throw in a TIE fighter to get yourself to 200 and call it a day.
This is something I think is really going to be interesting to see as the game develops. Like, as we get more upgrade cards out there, as staple, quote-unquote staple upgrade cards start to emerge, I'm interested to see if it's still, you know, a viable option to take those really relatively wide bids there, or if we'll start to see that gap start to narrow. You know, like, what is going to be the kind of general range we see in second edition? I feel like there will be a window. It's just we don't know what it is yet until we start to see what the powerhouse combos are.
Right. I mean, it's very early on. We haven't even actually seen the official release of the game yet. And I think people are just really excited to fly Initiative 6 because it's the highest you can fly. But when we actually get into more playing and people find out what's good and what's not, I think those fives and even those fours will start to creep in a lot more as people get more comfortable with the way the game works.
And I think the big question will be about Initiative 6 is, will having multiple lower initiative ships be a good counterbalance to one really expensive high initiative ship, right? Like, is it going to be more viable to just have a lot of ships and a lot of, you know, bodies out on the table so that you can just get good action efficiency by virtue of having lots of ships and lots of shots? Or will having that maneuvering control at initiative 6 be more important than even having a lot of ships?
Right. Well, it really does put an emphasis on maneuvering and arc placement, because you could have as many generic ships as you want. If you can field five initiative ones, if you've got a really good initiative six ace that can just get around them and just take shots from behind or from the side and stay out of arc, then that's all it's going to take.
And the initiative order is more important than ever. I was playing off against a list that had three of those initiative four Skull Squadron Fang Fighters. And that's a pretty intimidating thing, especially with them all loaded out with fearlessness. They can do a lot of damage. But I had just two really strong initiative five aces, and, you know, getting that damage in and taking those ships off the board before they can activate or activate for their second or third time, that's all the difference it takes, even if it's, you know, not a huge point difference or initiative difference. The last thing I wanted to talk about before we get into our favorite lists so far is something that kind of surprised me by how much I liked it. I didn't expect it to impact my experience with the game that much, but now I've really come to appreciate this new damage deck.
Yeah, I really love some of the new cards and some of the new writing on some of the pre-existing cards. It just really makes this deck more fun and interesting to interact with as part of the game.
And I'm a competitive player. That's the part of X-Wing I enjoy the most. I'm obviously still a huge Star Wars fan, but I like to play the game as a skill game, right? Like, get the best combo I can out there, try to adapt to the metagame. But at the same time, I still appreciate the thematic elements of the game. And I think a lot of the new cards in the damage deck, or the updated cards in the damage deck, lend itself to making even your competitive games feel more thematic and still give you decision opportunities.
Right, so one good example is the new writing for Console Fire. So Console Fire used to be at the start of the combat phase, you'd roll a die, and then if you roll a hit, you suffer a damage. And now it's before you engage, roll one attack die, and on a hit result, suffer one damage. So if an initiative 6 shoots your initiative 5 ship and deals this crit, you're going to have to suffer the effect of this card before you even get to shoot. So if it's the difference between surviving another round, you could just die right at the beginning of your engagement.
One of the really, I guess you could say, fun ones. It wasn't so fun because I was suffering, but I still appreciated it, was the Disabled Power Regulator, which is a new one. It's a ship damage card, and before you engage, gain one ion token. After you execute an ion maneuver, repair this card. So I think this one's fun for a lot of reasons. I like to see those ion mechanics get thrown into the game even when there aren't any ion cannons out on the table. I think that's interesting. It also scales in a really interesting way for small, medium, and large base ships. So if a small base ship takes this, the next time they engage, they'll get ionized. They'll have to suffer the effect the next time they're going to move. So they'll just do that one forward. Now, it gets really interesting when you're talking about medium and large base ships, because normally to ionize a medium base, you need it to have two ion tokens, and then to ionize a large base, it has to have three. Well, those tokens aren't going to clear, so it's going to build up to the point of you getting ionized. So it kind of gives you this lingering sense of dread as you have the card and starts to impact your decision-making. Because I caught this on my Boba Fett at a really inopportune position. I was heading towards the board edge and didn't have a lot of maneuver options. Now suddenly all my decision-making is impacted by the fact that I know, okay, the second time I shoot here, I'm going to get ionized and I'm going to go one straight. And that's going to be really hard to recover from based on my positioning.
Right, because you can't fix this card. You just have to suffer it until you are ionized, and then it goes away.
Right, unless you throw, you know, an upgrade card on there that can actually repair cards, which does happen in this game. We have a lot more upgrades that repair damage cards by flipping them face down. it creates some interesting gameplay opportunities. We see this on other ones too. Things like lose stabilizer, where after you execute a non-straight maneuver, suffer one damage and repair this card. Or like the updated damage sensor array, where you can't perform any actions except focus actions and actions on damage cards. So what I think are interesting about these cards is that they give you decision-making within the damage card. We had that a little bit in the first edition damage deck, but a lot of times the first edition damage deck, things like damage sensor ray, in that edition, you wouldn't be able to perform any actions, so it kind of forced your hand. Like, you have to repair this card. Right. What's interesting about a lot of these damage cards in second edition is that they give you opportunities to make decisions, where you go, well, I don't have to repair the damage sensor array, because right now, all I really need is to just get the focus token. I can still take focuses. But if you don't repair that card, later on, it might end up backfiring, and you'll get in a position where you need to take another action, like a barrel roll or something, and you're not going to be able to, because you decided to delay and not repair that card.
One of the other damage cards I really like, too, from the new deck is Panicked Pilot. So when you flip the card, you take two stress tokens. This is great, because Now you're just locked in for two turns, no actions, unless for some reason you have a way to clear two stress tokens.
Yeah, this is kind of an updated version of Thrust Control Fire damage card from first edition, where you just get one stress token. And that was interesting in first edition, because sometimes that would pop up at a really inopportune time, where, like, normally in a normal circumstance, getting a stress token isn't the end of the world. Like, every ship has blue maneuvers, they can clear it. In first edition, that would pop up at weird times and suddenly penalize you. Or if you're Kay and Farlander, weirdly give you attack modifications at a weird time. That did happen to me a couple times. But in second edition, now that we've got Panic Pilot and it's always two stress tokens, you're gonna get action denied for at least a couple turns there, which is really annoying, even though a stress token normally isn't the end of the world. This is also interesting. You were pointing out before the show that there's a lot more abilities that flip damage cards back up. There's one X-Wing pilot, I can't remember who it is, the Initiative 5 X-Wing pilot does it just by spending die results when he's attacking, and he can look at him and flip him. And this seems like a crazy one just to flip over and over again.
Yeah, so the interaction I had in one of my games was Soontir shot at Initiative 6 and dealt Panicked Pilot to, I think it was Edrio Two Tubes, the X-Wing. So he takes two stress, card flips face down. Rexler Blast shoots at Initiative 5. I have an evade token, so when he suffers a damage, if I'm evading, he's got to flip one of his damage cards. The only damage card he had face down was Panicked Pilot, so he flipped it, took two more stress tokens, and then flipped it down. So he went from 0 to 4 stress tokens in two shots. And that was just amazing.
And that's just crippling, too, because it's hard enough to get actions in this game. So getting 4 stress tokens is really going to shut you down. But yeah, there's some really interesting thematic stuff, I think, in this damage deck. And I like it more than I expected to, especially if you're able to get that promo damage deck for pre-ordering the game. I'd really recommend getting your hands on this. This is one of my favorite promotional items that Fantasy Flight has put out. Super cool art, obviously the larger card size, and you have the X-Wing on there. If you can get your hands on one of these damage decks, I'd really recommend it. I look forward to, hopefully they'll produce more of these with different ships on them, you know, have a TIE Fighter damage deck and whatnot.
One for each faction would be cool.
That would be super cool. Hey, Radio TCX listeners. I've got a few quick community announcements here. First up, I want to give a shout out to another store championship winner. Congratulations to Drew Brody, who won the Game Ogre store championship in Westlake Village, California. He won that event with a Lieutenant Dormance quick draw and new squadron pilot list that looks pretty sweet. So congratulations, Drew, on winning that event. We're also working on updating our Patreon reward tier. So I'm going to try and post an official announcement with some more details in the next week or so stay tuned for that. A huge thank you to everyone who has supported us on Patreon. We'll be announcing our raffle winners in next week's episode, but this month we're going to be giving away several conversion kits. So thank you guys so much for supporting the podcast. If you want to become a supporter on Patreon, please go to patreon.com/radiotcx. Become a supporter at any level. And now back to the podcast. All right, so let's talk about some of the favorite lists we've played with so far. Both of the lists I have, one of them is literally a list I talked about on the podcast a couple weeks ago when me and Carson were list building. The other one is a modified version of my Boba Fett list. But first up, I wanted to talk about the Benthic Two Tubes, Edrio Two Tubes, Rebel Synergy list I got going. They obviously seem like an obvious combo. I think they're brothers in Star Wars lore, so their abilities synergize really well. This whole list is 200 points and has all initiative 2 pilots, so it's definitely on the lower end. You're not going to control first player, but you get some really fun action efficiency synergy stuff going on. So this one is Benthic Two Tubes in a U-Wing with Magva Yaro, Perceptive Co-Pilot, and the Pivot Wing configuration. Edrio Two Tubes in a T-65 X-Wing with Proton Torpedoes, S-Foils, and the R2 Astromech. Talos Squadron Pilot in a Z-95 with just the Squad Leader Talon upgrade. And then a Gray Squadron Bomber in the Y-Wing with Proton Torpedoes and an Ion Cannon Turret. Obviously, this list has got some synergies going on. The Two Tubes brothers with their Benthic having, after you perform a focus action, you may transfer one of your focus tokens to a friendly ship at range 1 to 2. And then Edrio having, before you activate, if you are focused, meaning if you have a focus token, you may perform an action. Right there, that combination is really potent. It's decently expensive. Those two ships with the upgrades they have add up to 124 points. But you can do some really fun stuff with Edrio getting basically three actions a turn and having proton torpedoes and some repositioning actions.
Yeah, it just sounds pretty gross.
I was doing crazy stuff with it where, you know, you'd get focused. I could preemptively barrel roll before I moved, then followed up with a boost with my S-foils. Gave me some awesome repositioning options. But just most of the time, being able to stack multiple focus tokens onto one ship, there actually aren't that many abilities in this game. Obviously, you can't repeat a focus action even if you're granted an additional action. So being able to get two of those focus tokens really added to the survivability of this ship. And I think generally this list doesn't present a good first target, which are the kind of lists I like.
Yeah, so in one of the games I've played, I went up against the Benthic brothers, and it's just astounding to see the action economy you can get between the two. You'd think there's only so much a U-Wing and an X-Wing can do, but man, having all those tokens on Edrio, and sure, he's at initiative too, but I mean, he's getting shot at, you know, if he's getting shot at twice, that's two fully modified defense rolls he can have with those focus tokens. And that's really good in second edition.
Yeah, and I mean, even at the lower initiative, you know, you get that value payoff in the actions rather than the initiative. I love Perceptive Copilot. I think it's going to be, at least in the early on life of second edition, going to be a really important upgrade card. Having that on Benthic, so I actually get to keep a focus token and then have an extra one to pass, means that often you're getting three attack dice backed by a focus token from Benthic, which is not bad. You're going to do some decent amount of damage in this game with even just focused shots. What I really like in this list, and what actually one of my favorite ship combos, you'll see a similar ship in my other list here too, having the Talos Squadron with Squad Leader, where it's a pretty basic Z95, right? It's not going to do a lot of damage, and you're mostly using your action to trigger that Squad Leader coordinate, so you'll get stressed out a bunch, and you're just passing actions off. And it's limited use, right? You can only, with Squad Leader, those coordinates can only be actions you have. That still works pretty good in kind of doubling up and having a redundancy for this action combo where, you know, even if Benthic goes down, I can still get Edrio focuses before he activates since they're all in initiative 2. Or I can use that Tala to pass out extra actions to my Gray Squadron Bomber so we can get fully modified proton torpedo shots. I had a scenario where I was going to use the Pivot Wing title to flip around with my Benthic, but I still wanted to get Edrio a focus action. So I activated the Tala first, coordinated a focus action to Benthic. Benthic got two focus tokens, passed one to Edrio. Then Benthic was able to still perform the stop maneuver, Pivot Wing to flip around. So not only did Benthic flip around, it got focus modification on its attack, and Edrio still was focused to get his extra action. Crazy stuff.
Yeah, and the value of that coordinate can't be underestimated either. For the most part, that action is usually on large base support type ships, so the fact that you have that on a Z95 is pretty incredible too.
Yeah, and it just, you know, 29 points, like even if they target it first, yeah, you can wipe it off the board, but that's a pretty cheap investment for a lot of action value.
And you're going to get at least one really cool turn of action efficiency out of it first. One of the lists I've really been digging since I've been playing second edition is an Imperial list. It's just two ships. It's Darth Vader in the TIE Advanced and then Raxler Brath in the TIE Defender. So two small base ships. I've got Supernatural Reflexes, Afterburners, and Fire Control on Vader, and Juke, Heavy Laser Cannon, and Fire Control System on the Defender.
So you know, pretty straightforward loadouts. We're saying even for, you know, a list with not that many ships, that's, you know, only a handful of upgrade cards. It, pretty easy to comprehend there. What has been the best part of having that list there? You only got two ships and they're both small base there. Really high initiative, though. Is it the initiative that's paying off for you? Is it the force charges on Vader?
It's just a mix of several different things. I really like Initiative 5 and 6. They're pretty good, you know, even against other Initiative 5s and 6s. I really like the way Supernatural Reflexes works. You know, getting Vader to have all that action economy before he moves is really good in a pinch. I haven't found that I've needed it a lot, but in that turn where you might need to barrel roll and then focus and target lock, you can do that with Supernatural Reflexes and then move. So that's a good option.
And that Supernatural Reflexes card is really expensive as a force talent. There are actually not that many force talents anyway, but it's the most expensive one you can get. But I get what you're saying about the importance of having that option, because if you're only running two ships, if you get blocked on Vader, that's going to deny Vader, who normally has amazing action efficiency with his pilot ability, deny him all that action efficiency. So being able to clear your maneuvers with Vader is really important. So even though it's kind of a redundancy, having that pre-move reposition option is really important.
And it's really fun too with the afterburners to, let's just say, basically advanced sensor, barrel roll, focus target lock, do a 4K and then boost with afterburners and then just maybe get that sweet range one pot shot behind a ship. Doesn't happen often, but when it does, oh man, it's just so satisfying.
And you've had good experience with the Defender too.
The new Defender chassis is so good with the native white boost, the extra shield, its ship ability, full throttle. So when it does a 3-5 speed maneuver or fully executes a 3-5 speed maneuver, it gets to do an evade action. So that paired with Juke on Rexler Brath is so good because his ability is when you perform an attack that hits, if you are evading, so if you have an evade token, you can flip one of the Defender's face-down damage cards. So we talked earlier about how I was able to get Edrio two tubes quadruple stressed, and that's how I did it. And that's just a really... And at Initiative 5, he's more likely than not going to be able to shoot and get that ability to proc before he's getting shot at, so he's going to have that evade token. And then with Juke, to cancel one of their evade results, super good. And this list comes in at 188 points, so it's beating a lot of other Initiative 5s and 6s.
Yeah, you've got a crazy aggressive bid there, at least as far as I can tell, and you've got those high initiative ships. Seems like a fun one. Got to be a little bit afraid of those ordnance strikes, though, because I think a weight of dice, right, if those come in and catch you, it's really on you to position well, right?
Yeah, and honestly, like the heavy laser cannon on the Defender, too, is just there because having a bigger bid than 12 points just seems a little ridiculous, but to me, it hasn't seemed worth it to put munitions on these two ships just because they don't need them where they are right now in this list. So it's pretty fun.
So the other list I'm really enjoying, and it's a tweak on a list I built for the podcast a couple episodes ago, but I had to make some distinct changes. I'm running Boba Fett with Old Tarak in the Fang and then a Black Sun Soldier Z95. So this is kind of a variant on the list I talked about a couple weeks ago on the podcast where I had the Boba Fett, same loadout as this one. Marauder title gives you the gunnery slot plus the reroll out the back. Han Solo gunner. When you engage, you can perform a red focus. My favorite perceptive co-pilot to get two focus tokens when you focus. And then Lone Wolf there once per round. You can spend that charge, get a reroll, and then get that charge back at the end of the round. I really like that Boba build. 101 points, a little bit expensive, but the new medium base feels so good with that white boost on the fire spray. And this ship really does feel like an ace to me. You know, at Initiative 5, it's pretty high up there, and you're going to do a lot of damage. I had that previously paired up with a Initiative 4 Skull Squadron Fang with just Fearlessness, and then threw in a Crimora Goon with a Dorsal Turret and a Proton Torpedo. So I just thought a little bit of an ordnance threat out there. It's just Initiative 1 on the Y-Wing. I really didn't like that part of the list, so that was a struggle for me. I really didn't have much of a bid, so if I got matched up with other Initiative 5s, which is presumably going to happen, you're really going to suffer, because you want to be able to use that boost and that rear arc to get in some good positions. And honestly, just burning down a Y-Wing in this game, it goes pretty quick there. You know, even a couple two-dice shots are going to tear apart a Y-Wing. So I opted to shake it up. So I was like, well, I want to get a bigger bid in here, which means I'll probably have to go way cheaper on that third ship. So I was like, well, I've had good experience with that Talos Squadron with the Squad Leader upgrade card, so why not just go the same way in the Scum direction, get the Black Sun Soldier Z95 with the Squad Leader card, and then upgrade that Fearlessness Skull Squadron into a Fearlessness Old Tarak.
And old Turok's ability is so good now in this game, with the fact that you're not going to get as much token stacking. The fact that your opponent only has to have him in arc at range one to discard all their tokens is just super good.
Yeah, and obviously the Fang chassis is really fun, really aggressive. This is the list I faced off against a bunch of other Fang fighters at lower initiative and was able to deal out a bunch of damage thanks to that initiative 5, start taking those ships off the board. I really do like this combo now. The list comes to 191 points, so it's about a 9-point bid there, which I feel so far seems pretty aggressive to me, though I'm happy to be proven wrong here with your, you know, 188 list or whatever. But it felt like a good combination. I felt like I had to make a lot of good decisions, because with just a few ships there, if I get caught in some bad positions or get caught without my actions, that's going to be pretty rough. I liked having the Black Sun Soldier there to throw out that occasional extra focus token, just to give you that extra action support or help really emphasize damage. Get a target lock with that coordinate and then take a natural focus. Deal out a bunch of damage at initiative 5 before my opponent shoots back. And if my opponent targets the Black Sun Soldier, it's still only 31 points. So I feel like I still have two strong ships. So hopefully at that point, I've already done a decent amount of damage.
And second edition Boba is so good. There are so many things you can do with that medium base that you would not have been able to do with a large base. Like if you're eyeing up that maneuver and you're wondering, am I going to fit there? Am I not going to fit there? Well, now all of a sudden you fit there, and then you can even fit a boost in, and then your opponent doesn't have you in arc anymore. And then when you engage, you get those two focus tokens. That's just amazing.
Yeah, the only real penalty about the Han Solo Gunner trigger happening when you engage is I did play against Torkoal Muk, so shout out to Annie Myers for draining me down to initiative 0. He made me make some pretty tough decisions.
All right, Tim, here's another one for you. If you really liked my 188-point list, you'll love this 186-point list. So I've got Soontir Fel. Again, this is another Imperial list. I've got Soontir Fel and the TIE Interceptor with Outmaneuver, Stealth Device, and Shield Upgrade. I have Whisper in the TIE Phantom with Afterburners, Advanced Sensors, Juke, and Darth Vader Crew, and Night Beast in the TIE Fighter with no upgrades. So this list is good because I've got some options with Soontir Fel. I usually try to use him as a flanker, and at initiative 6 with the bid that I have, he's a pretty good flanker. He's usually getting out of arcs. If he's not, it's because I'm flying him really bad, and that's my fault, but he's pretty good with outmaneuver because he can get outside of arc, and then with the auto thrusters ability, once he does an action, he can get a red barrel roll or boost action, so I can get out of arc, and then maybe let's just say I take an evade just in case they catch me. I can boost in, maybe keep them at range 1, and if I'm lucky enough to catch them in the bullseye, then I get my focus token from Soontir Fel's ability, and then I'm outside their arc. I've got a focus token, I've got an evade token, I have outmaneuver, so they're rolling one less green die, which is pretty good.
Yeah, outmaneuver is pretty nasty, being able to just reduce that agility value. You know, dice are so important, not just taking them away. You're going to deal so much more damage. It's crazy in this game because you're not getting, you know, those evade token added results from anything. So removing a dice really hurts. And yeah, it's the auto thrusters feature really makes the TIE Interceptor, I think, stand out for what they are. Being able to be one of the few ships that can actually take both a boost and a barrel roll in one turn is huge. And then add on to that Soontir Fel ability, getting that focus token. This sounds like a pretty nasty combo, but you got to fly it, right? Right? Like, that's going to take a lot of effort to make sure you line up that firing arc, especially now that the barrel rolls are more limited.
Right. And I mean, and shield upgrade and stealth device are fine and dandy until your opponent has you in range 1 and you might not have any tokens and you're just in a bad spot and Soontir can melt real quick. 2 shots, 1 if your opponent's really lucky and has good dice modification. He's just gone. He's out.
So I feel like I understand TIE Fighters all right, though I haven't actually played against or played with the TIE Phantom yet. So can you tell me a little bit what makes that ship stand out in second edition?
So the Phantom's really good. Yeah, even in first edition, it was a really finicky ship to kind of tag down and lock onto. In second edition, especially Whisper, I love her ability. So with the Phantom's new ship chassis ability, Stygium Array, after you do a decloak in the system phase, you can perform an evade action. So before your Phantom even moves, you're getting an action, and that's a really good action economy. So you're basically getting either a 2 barrel roll or a 2 boost and then an evade token for what feels like almost free is super good. And then the nice thing about getting that evade action is it doesn't keep Whisper from taking another action during her turn. So Whisper is actually one of the few ships that can token stack. So she can get that evade and then move, and then she can get her focus, or she can barrel roll or do whatever it is. And then I also have afterburners on her. So I could get that decloak, evade, move, get a focus, and then I could boost. And that's really good action economy for that ship.
Now, in second edition, the TIE Phantoms are a little bit weaker on offense because they only have 3 attack dice instead of a native 4 attack dice, but they also come in a little bit cheaper. So, you know, there's a balancing point there, right? You don't have the oppressive advanced cloaking device that we saw in first edition, but at the same time, you get some cool abilities there. The Stygium Array ability, I really like. That's a nice balance there where you have that evade. You have to keep it if you want to recloak, but you can also spend it defensively. So I think it makes for more interesting gameplay. I am actually excited. I got to start slipping this ship into some lists here so I can get some practice with it. See if decloaking feels the same to me.
And the nice thing about Whisper, too, is at initiative 5, her ability is when after you perform an attack that hits, you get an evade token. Mm-hmm. So if you're shooting at something that's a lower initiative than you, you know, 3 dice is still pretty good. You're probably going to get 1 damage through, especially if you're at range 1, you're rolling 4 dice. Then if you've got 1 evade token already, you're going to get a second one. Then you already have 1 to use at the end of engagement for that decloak, and you have 1 for defense, which is super good.
Yeah, it takes the pressure off you to have to keep that evade token, so you can spend it to avoid some damage.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, a lot of cool stuff here. I'm still having tons of fun with this game so far. I'm really looking forward to the official launch here in just about a week, September 13th.
Yeah, it should be really good. I'm super excited for the new stuff to come out and more people to get their hands on it and to start playing more games. It's going to be great.
Well, John, thank you so much for coming on to the show today and filling in for Carson. Carson should be back next week, and we'll share some more thoughts right before the official launch of Second Edition. But thanks for coming on the show, John. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, always a pleasure, Tim.
Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of Radio TCX. If you like the show, please go on to facebook.com/RadioTCX and like our Facebook page. You can also follow us on Twitter at Radio TCX Podcast. And if you really like the show, please go on to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review along with a comment saying what you like about the podcast and why others would be interested in listening. If it's been a while since you left your iTunes review, wouldn't be a bad idea to go on there, update it so people can see that you're still listening and enjoying this podcast. If you want to support the show directly, please go on to patreon.com/radioTCX and become a patron of the show today. Again, guys, thank you so much for listening. Carson should be back next week, and we'll be talking some more X-Wing 2nd Edition. So until then, have a good week.